Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, I have the pleasure of having Valerie. She is Valerie Shepherd. She's founder of Source Power out of Southern California, and we're going to talk about creating an effective business strategy for your business today. If you'd like to speak with her, you can give us a call at 347-324-3460, 347-324-3460, or you can pose your question in the chat room, and I'll go ahead and read it on the air. Valerie, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Tim. I'm really excited to be here.
Great. I guess to begin with, kind of tell us about yourself. A lot of our listening audience like to hear your story, so if you don't mind taking a couple of minutes to share it.
Sure. So I am a recovering corporate executive on radical sabbatical, and I have I kind of jumped out of corporate life as a vice president of marketing for a Southern California division of a company that's headquartered elsewhere, running a team that was responsible for some national and regional brands, pretty big ones, and I was there for left in 2006, and ever since have been on a different kind of journey and have gone back into consulting, and I do leadership consulting and business strategy, marketing and branding consulting, and It's been amazing. I've been doing a lot of writing, so I've been published a few times in some magazines and have mm-hmm. completed a couple of ebooks, and I'm about to release another book. And my journey has been around helping teams create high performance. So high performance inside the culture of the organization as well as outside the culture. And I've got an MBA from Syracuse University. Yay, go Orange!
Yay.
And, yeah, made it to the Sweet 16, and yay, go Syracuse. And I hail from Virginia, and my father was a career Marine, so I'm a military brat, and have lived in 10 states, moved 20 times, have been an international globetrotter, visited 27 countries, and that's a bit of my story, some of it from the professional side and the personal side.
Well, taking your experience from going, kind of take a step backwards, in visiting countries across the board, are the strategies are the same or are they going to differ slightly from one strategy from a country to another since you have visited several countries?
Well, a brand, so my perspective on what a brand has to have stand for one thing everywhere it goes. Like, that's why it is a brand instead of a product with, like, a trust mark or a trade name. The difference is that a brand has a higher order, and it creates a relationship with its target consumer, primary prospect, everywhere that it is. Now, the brand may change some dynamics in order to appeal to how that person lives her life on a local level, you know, so the Coke formula shifts softly, I say, so slightly, to meet the palate that is different in China than it is in Russia, than it is in, you know, San Clemente, California. But ultimately, the bundle of promise that the brand makes is the same across the world. And certainly, you know, imagery will shift, so the pictures, things that you use to bring the brand to life, the message of the brand to life in other countries, that will need to potentially go through some massaging. But it shouldn't be a wholesale different strategy, or you would ask the question, I would ask the question, perhaps this should be a completely different brand. If it can't travel across the globe, essentially holding true to the center, the core essence of that business, then it might need to be another brand.
Wow. So, like, for example, if we take a couple of brands like Coke, and I was in Atlanta a few months ago, and I finally went to the Coke plant, and you see throughout the whole world, even from the flavors to the marketing, each one varies slightly. Now, North America is North America, with exception, some things is a little different going from Mexico to South America. But amazingly, when you go to Asia, the bottling slightly change. Even the flavor and the texture of the Coca-Cola drink will change. You go to Africa, it's more watery than versus anywhere in the rest of the world. So it kind of slightly changes, even like you just mentioned, the texture, the flavor, to the even the brand itself. And what I think you, with your experience, as business owners, as we look at our brand today, we need to be conscious, okay, if we go for North America, we know Canada and U.S. and Europe is pretty much the same. But however, when you go beyond the West, real Western countries, that English is not the main language, you need to market your product a little differently. What do you normally would say to a business, either as IT or some other product, hey, that you need to take the culture into this, your marketing plan, and to brand it?
Well, I would say exactly that, that it's the centerpiece of a brand promise is the relationship it has with the consumer. So it's always going to be about what is that person who I'm trying to convince to connect with me on a higher order level. So it's not about features and benefits, which is what a lot of companies live on, features and bells and whistles, and it should be about benefits. And ultimately, the highest order benefits, which are the emotional connection that people make with a brand promise. So it's always going to be about what is it that consumer or customer, if you're business to business, what is it that they are specifically looking for from your promise, and how are you delivering it? And are you able to meet their needs in a way that differentiates you from whomever else might be trying to gain some of their mind or heart share?
Okay. Kind of give us some ideas. When you create an effective business strategy, what do you need to look at with? Should you do like a business plan or a section of a plan to create this the strategy? How can one go about making a strategy?
An effective strategy, as I see it, is rooted in some pretty foundational pieces of understanding. So I come from a Procter & Gamble background. I come from a scientific relationship with marketing. I used to work with Sergio Zeman, who used to be a chief marketing officer at Coca-Cola, was the one who launched New Coke and then pulled it and relaunched and created Classic Coke, and has done a number of things since his tenure at Coca-Cola. And I had the great fortune to work with him for a couple of years. And, my background is in a data-based association with creating that kind of plan. I also see marketing as the hub of the wheel. So, the business strategy and the marketing strategy are one and the same. It's the business is about marketing, and marketing is about the business. And so, that's kind of one thing I would say. So number one is it's got to be rooted in data. What do you know about the unmet need? So the first thing strategically is you're creating a product or a brand to meet a need. What a lot of companies do is they create something and they go, okay, now I've made this. What do I do with it now? Oh, let's go sell some. Well, that's like retrofitting. It's not ideal. It can happen that someone lands in a place where they've got this amazing opportunity and they want to go with it. And I would still say, great, get it out there. And at the same time, start building that bridge to who is the primary prospect and why do they need this? What is it that they're looking for? What's the unmet need? That's the foundational piece. What's the unmet need that I have something uniquely designed to meet that need. And the word uniquely means I can differentiate it from everybody else in the marketplace. Can you launch a Me Too and be successful? Potentially. But in an ideal world, you're trying to separate out your own space that you can own relative to the competition and maybe even protect as long as you possibly can from any encroachment from competition. So who is it that you're, what is it that you have that can meet this unmet need? And then how do they want you to do that? Like, what is it that you can use about the brand? So what are the claims that you can make about the product, the brand, that will help this person notice you in the marketplace, listen to what you have to say, and be persuaded by what you have to say to purchase from you, so to vote with their dollars? So there's this thing called virtual consumption where people love you. You know, they like your Facebook page or they tweet about you. But when it comes time to vote with the wallet, somehow they're silent. And so we're talking about moving from, in your strategic plan, what is the way that you move from virtual consumption into, you know, dabbling and moving up the chain to loyal consumer who, even if you raise the price or make some mistake, they continue to vote with their dollars for you. So the plan is founded on what's the unmet need and how do I uniquely deliver it? And then it's a matter of what am I capable of doing in this period of time? So with all the resources that I can bring to bear, what are the two or three, and I don't like strategic plans that have 5 and 6 and 10 things that you have to do. It's not a great thing unless you've got, you can marshal lots of resources. So I look at strategic plans that I like them when they have 3 to 4, maybe 5 at the most, focal points of how we're going to go to market. What is the go-to-market plan? How am I taking this beautiful offering and connecting with the primary prospect to create a relationship that goes on forever and ever and ever?
Wow. You know, with smaller businesses that starting out, what advice when you have that you have already identified that niche? What should steps that they can make that they don't have to on, that they can kind of be in control in one sense of it, because that's the only thing with making a brand is expensive. Exception of brand is expensive. I think the only exception is IT, because you can kind of play around with IT if you have a good search market person who's kind of marketing and doing the SEO on it. You kind of can cheat the system, but other than that, you really can't. What advice do you have them if they're a small little company who have a product and they're trying to market that, and the key from making so many mistakes and, hey, I'm going to spend money on this, then spending the money on that. If they have a shoestring budget, what will you tell them how to manage that particular product to bring it to market?
For me, the how is not different. So regardless of what the marketing spend is, the strategy should be the same. Tactically, you're maybe be pulling in, you know, different tactics relative to how much your budget is. So maybe you're using free mechanisms or more low-cost mechanisms to reach your market, to reach your target, than you would if you had a $25 million budget or even a $1 million budget. So the strategy is about how is it that I'm going to meet my objective, creating a relationship with this product such that it turns from a product to a brand. I really can get the benefit of having a brand. So the how for that isn't riding on the budget. It's if that's the I'm going to have to create a relationship by helping them understand my uniquely developed way of solving their problem. That doesn't change because you have less money. The way you go about bringing that idea to life might change. So I still hold with small companies that focusing on what is it that really will create the traction and the connection to the objective is how is the strategy. And then the tactics relate to how do I leverage my own resources and how do I leverage other people's resources. So if you're resource poor in terms of actual spending ability, then maybe you're looking at joint ventures. Maybe you're looking at how you can partner with a company that is non-competitive that can help get more eyes, more hearts, more minds connected to what it is that you're offering. Maybe there are ways that you're doing, if you can't put money into, you know, traditional marketing or even doing joint venture work, perhaps you have to be looking at a sampling plan. So maybe all of your resources go into how do I sample this so that people get to experience it, and that becomes the centerpiece of my marketing plan. So whatever, and with IT, where you can send things so quickly and connect people into an experience of the benefit, that doesn't always require a huge pocketbook.
Okay. Or, wow. For example, you mentioned Coke at the top of the hour, and I think it's kind of twofold because I remember in the 80s when that happened, and I said, okay, they just might be using it for a marketing plan to get more attention. I just can't believe Coke would take a proven product for almost 100 years to pull it to bring a new flavor out. And I thought it was more of, and when I was in college, I thought, okay, they're trying to do like a kind of hold the market hostage for this in order to build more interest.
Really?
I think part of the, well, I was thinking the opposite. I just can't believe that they took a brand that they built for nearly a century then to take it out and make it like Pepsi, and a lot, you know, and then and just throw away something that worked. I mean, just for us in business school, we just couldn't believe it. It might be something more than that. It might just be pulling this aside. That's what our thought was in Kansas.
No, it was a real true launch. And
it was a real true launch.
It was a real true launch, and it was I never have worked for Coca-Cola, so I'm talking to you from having worked with Sergio after he left Coca-Cola and started Zeman Group, which is still in business, strategic marketing and business strategy organization. So my understanding is it was a real true launch. It was based on data. I mean, he's a scientific marketer. Sergio's platform is he's one of those people. He's written a couple books. One of them is The End of Marketing as We Know It. The other one is The End of Advertising as We Know It. And they both talk about how marketing is not about fun stuff, like having a celebrity spokesperson and, you know, putting your name on a stadium. He doesn't believe that's what marketing is about, nor do I, unless you can prove that it actually returns revenue. That marketing is scientific endeavor. There is art and craft in it, which comes into how you take the science and communicate with it. But it's based on pretty strong data suggesting or indicating a way to go and a reason why to go that direction. You know, marketing is about selling more stuff to more people for more money, more efficiently. That's kind of the definition, the centerpiece of marketing, as Sergio would explain it or teach it. And so my understanding and my belief is that Coke was looking for an opportunity to attract people for whom the Coca-Cola taste at that time wasn't exactly what they were looking for. And they had data to suggest that if they shifted the formula and the flavor, that new users would come and other users would and some of the current users might be who were using at a low level might be willing to shift, while the, you know, heart and soul of the Coke user would still be there. And that's not what happened, as we all know. But it wasn't, you know, I don't really believe that too many brands roll hundreds of millions of dollars to play with the market. It's not a trust-building endeavor. It's also not fiscally responsible to shareholders or even to the brand. So I haven't heard stories where people, you know, were equity managers, and by equity I mean brand equity, not necessarily financial equity, but where equity managers, equity stewards, throw that kind of caution to the wind. And I certainly wouldn't. I would be very much against that.
To get that type of attention, because some marketing companies will bring negative attention in order to get a product out. They do the reverse psychology to make people emotional, aroused, or give a reaction in order to get a brand out. I mean, it's like reality TV. A lot of things people don't really like about it, but the only thing, you know, in one sense, but things they do like about it, but the shock factor gets more attention than versus the nice, gentle way of doing things. What's your opinion in that
would,
in marketing?
Well, I guess I would. I disagree a little bit, Tim. I see. You know,
okay.
I don't. I haven't participated in that kind of marketing strategy. What I would suggest is my way of looking at it, which could be, you know, not necessarily right. It's just my way of looking at it. But the, what I think you may be observing is there are times when I have, as an equity steward or as a consultant, have looked at very polarizing messages. Right. So when I look at advertising and you try to reverse engineer, you see something in the marketplace, one of the things, the first place I go when I see something that totally offends me or is like, good grief, what are they thinking? The first thing I ask myself is, am I the prospect? Are they trying to talk to me? So like the Paris Hilton ads where she's sliding off of a car and, or, you know, the I think it was Carl's Jr. and the $6 burger or whatever, those big thick hamburgers and the model is, you know, washing a car and getting all wet and sliding off the car. And to me, that's like really, that's really offensive to me as a woman. And at the same time, I acknowledge I'm not the target. Those burger ads are not targeting me. They're targeting probably men of a certain age for whom that is a beautiful message. And they're, I'm assuming that their volume sales go up significantly when they run those ads. And so what may be, you know, not great for me is totally attracting the primary target. It looks like they may be doing a general market ad, but in fact, they're not. They're in the general market targeting a very specific user base that I'm assuming their data suggests is in the general market at whatever time we're seeing those messages. So I feel like there are ads out there right now, and I do believe that brands are doing more irreverent marketing. So the character of the ad is irreverence, which can be polarizing. And, you know, irreverence is a very touchy thing depending on who you're speaking to. And so I do agree with you. From the outside looking in, it does look like brands are taking some pretty high risks and maybe looking like they're trying to anger people or send them in the – create traction by creating negative awareness. But that's a very – dangerous route to follow, and I would suggest that I think the wise people behind those brands are probably not consciously doing that. I think they're employing either a polarizing message, which really makes people choose one way or the other. You're in or you're out, you know, going to one end of the pole or the other end, or and or using a touch of irreverence that may tip into a little bit more, and it may just be that you're not the target they're talking to, so your reaction is one that they're not as concerned about.
Okay. For example, like, for example, the Burger King ad, you speak of burgers, the Scary King. Nobody gets it, you know. So that I was thinking, okay, that's a shock and awe type thing. The king does very little. He looks weird and, you know, weird. And, okay, we're still trying to figure out what's the reaction of that, what they're trying to get with that, and who is it really going to? Because I think it just recently stopped, but they've done things like that periodically. I haven't seen it recently. I haven't watched TV probably that much in the past 30 days, but it ran for a while across the country.
Yeah, I can't. I really can't comment on what they're thinking and why they're doing it. I would be surprised that a brand that big would take that route simply to be visible. But
yeah.
I could be wrong.
Wow. Within, when you sit down and create a strategy, you know, if you take it down to the small business owner themselves, is a certain way that a person should plan a business plan if they're doing the product service, or they're doing the service differently, or they still stay to those fundamentals that you mentioned to earlier, and craft out something that's going to work for them for that particular marketplace or that to be unique.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I got the
just repeat it. I mean, is it the same thing as if you do a product and a service? Should you keep the same strategy, or it's pretty much the same strategy you're just applying to either a product or to a service?
I feel the same. I feel that it's the same, that
okay.
The fundamentals are the fundamentals, and the service is providing a uniquely differentiated benefit and
mm-hmm.
some very specific ways that it does that. And so what's the promise that the service business is offering, and how are they delivering that promise? What is the reason that anybody in the marketplace should trust that what they are offering is actually going to come true? And that's same with a product as it is with a service. So for me, what I teach companies to do is look at it the same.
Okay. And if they come to your company and they want to, I guess, look at some of the packages you offer, your website is yoursourcepower.com?
Yes. Yoursourcepower.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And can you talk about some of the packages and information your company normally provide to companies as being a consultant?
Sure. I do a number of different things. My passion right now is a workplace happiness initiative.
Okay.
So I'm helping companies understand the importance and the power in happiness as a part of a cultural objective. So creating a culture of happiness a number one strategic priority for delivering the bottom line. And so
mm-hmm.
I've got a workplace happiness initiative that's at createworkplacehappiness.com. And I do a number of different consulting packages. I can do an individual package where I just come in and do a quick review of the marketing and the business strategy and provide some comments and some upside potential. So that's for people who pretty much have it done and are just wanting a gut check or some objective eyes to give them some feedback. And I can do that at any stage of the game with advertising,
mm-hmm.
with websites, with anything that's consumer or customer facing, anything in the marketplace. I have a team and we consult with companies on an ongoing basis. I do retainer-based projects to be that objective perspective on an ongoing basis, and also to be extra arms and mind and spirit to get work done. So helping people create their strategic plans and evaluate them. And I'm a trained professional moderator, so I can do market research and write reports and recommendations from market research to give people guidance on where they might want to go next. So a number of different ways to work. And I love
wow.
leadership coaching. And under my Workplace Happiness Initiative, I'm also a certified laughter yoga instructor. So I've got a product called Laugh Fit. Yeah, good. Laugh some more, Tim. It's good for you.
Okay. Great. So tell us about that. It's been
go
laughter
for it.
And yoga. So yoga and tell us that. You know, that's kind of neat. So you do that also in the workplace to release stress?
Oh, yeah. You know, Laugh Fit is a joint venture between my company, Source Power, and the Laughter Yoga Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And our goal is to get laughter yoga as a modality in workplace health and wellness programs. So these health and wellness programs do all kinds of things. So they, you know, 10 years ago, they were introducing, maybe even longer, I don't want to date myself too much, but they were introducing step aerobics, and now they're introducing Zumba and doing a number of things to get people working out more in the course of their business days as a way of reducing absenteeism and creating a more healthy body so that they are, you know, the company can enjoy lower health insurance costs and just a more healthy workforce altogether. Well, laughter yoga is a great part of that. It's a modality that's been around for about 15 years or so. It's been proven in actual, like, clinical trials to reduce stress, improve health, and healthier, happier people then drive better business results. They communicate better. They make more eye contact. So your culture goes up. Problem solution happens faster when the culture is happier and more free. You know, on a physiological basis, laughter increases oxygen to the brain. An oxygenated brain thinks faster and more clearly. You get more clarity. There are a number of
mm-hmm.
benefits. And so we're actively looking for companies who are companies, nonprofits, federal government, state, non-governmental organizations to implement a laughter yoga program in their health and wellness practices.
Wow. Wow. I guess in closing, any advice that you would like to leave our listeners with?
Yes, a couple of things. I think from a marketing and business strategy perspective, it's important to do more than just build it and think they will come. It's really important to understand the relationship that you're trying to create, understand the person with whom you're trying to create the relationship. What is it they're looking for? What's the unmet need? And how do you uniquely position yourself for their vote with their dollars in order to meet that need? And then the second thing is happiness creates success. It is not the other way around. It has been studied for a long time. And there are, you know, it's no secret why Forbes and other organizations are studying and reporting about cultures that are being centered and shifting into focus on happiness. And when we can be happy in what we're doing, we can create much more, much greater success. So it's shift our focus to being happy first, and success in all aspects of our lives follows.
Great. And just to recap real quick how to contact you.
Sure. You can get me by email at Valerie, V-A-L-E-R-I-E, at yoursourcepower.com. You can go to yoursourcepower.com, and there's a contact us page. And you can call my office at 949-891-8491.
Perfect. I really appreciate you coming onto the program. Wow, I learned a lot within the last 30 minutes. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Valerie.
Thank you, Tim, and blessings to you and your listeners. And I look forward to being here again sometime.
Great. I really appreciate it. Thank you again. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
This has been another production of The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. You can download this episode on the iTunes on Blog Talk Radio Network. Thank you for listening. Everybody, have a great day. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to The Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.